Good afternoon. Welcome to Conversations. This is your host, Michael Stone. We have a great show for you today with Gail Larson, How to Change the World by Telling a Better Story. But first, I want to thank you all for listening and give you quick community calendar updates here. We've got classic movie Singing in the Rain shows 1 p.m. at the Del Oro Theater in downtown Grass Valley as a fundraiser for the Del Oro mural. For more information, call 273-6932 or go to sierratheaters.com. Okay, and in addition to that, Douglas Truth's play, Death as a Salesman, will be presented on Off Center Stage Theater at 315 Richardson Street behind the Center of the Arts, 7:30 on Thursday. More information, 530-264-6327. The Offstage Theater in Grass Valley presents, that was a duplicate of that. Okay, a workshop on residential solar electric power will be held at Marysville this Saturday, September 26th, 10 to noon at Yuba Sutter Chamber of Commerce, 10th and E Streets, next to Ellis Lake. Topics covered include current technology, government incentives, how California's power prices enhance the payback of owning a solar system. For more information, call 530-432-3776. Scooter Pals annual fundraising reception and silent auction happens Saturday afternoon from 1 to 5 p.m. 412 Nevada Street in Nevada City. For more information, go to scooterpals.org. And an evening with Shay Duggan at Veterans Memorial Building in Nevada City, Saturday the 7th to 9, Saturday from 7 to 9, Duggan will offer traditional Celtic and Irish music on the mandolin, Irish tin, and penny whistle, as well as vocals and storytelling. Okay, to submit your community calendar event or public service announcement, visit kvmr.org. We have an easy-to-use online form. Just submit your request 2 weeks in advance, preferably be more. Okay, so let me get organized here. You're listening to Sophia on KVMR 89.5 FM in Nevada City and in Truckee 105.1 FM, translator K286 AM. As I said, my guest today is Gail Larson. She's the founder of Real Speaking. That's Gail Larson, founder of Real Speaking. You can find out more about her at www.realspeaking.net, where she coaches people who are catalyzing personal and planetary change in using their voices to speak out and be heard in support of inspired action. The impact and visibility of her programs merited a Small Business Administration Business Person of the Year Award. She served as an executive vice president of the Worldwide National Speakers Association, and she's the author of Transformational Speaking, If You Want to Change the World, Tell a Better Story. So, Gail, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you, Michael.
Well, it's very great to have you here. And let's just jump right in here. How can you change the world by telling a better story? Let's start there.
Well, I work with people who are wanting to speak out in public, often through public speaking, and with a lot of people who would be traditionally called activists. You know, let's get it right, let's get going, let's make change. And I work with people to try to move from what I call activism to artistry so that people really can get the idea of what's possible and step up to that new and better story rather than getting stuck in the disagreements on the lower levels.
Now, I was looking at some surveys on public speaking this morning in preparation for the show, and I realized in reading some of the things that public speaking is the number one fear that people have, ahead of fear of death, spiders, darkness, and heights. That sounds pretty bad. How come we're so afraid of speaking in public? What is it that keeps us in this state of fear? And I don't know, sometimes when I get up in front of a big group, I just forget everything that I'm going to say.
Well, I've had my own time of being in that same position. I used to be terrified of speaking. And I was just with a class of 26 people at Omega this weekend, and there was a lot of fear in that room as well. And what I suspect is that we think there's a way to speak that's going to make us successful and have it work, and the sense that we don't know it. And so often public speaking training is designed to teach us techniques to be better speakers without getting to the real core of what it is we want to say and our best way of saying it. And I find that that's the only thing that alleviates the fear. If we believe we can be ourselves, I often say, be yourself, everyone else is taken, and find your original medicine to bring it forward in a way that can be heard, then it gets better. Fritz Perl said, fear is excitement without the breath. So maybe we can transform it into excitement if we're in a place of trusting ourselves to really deliver what we're here to say.
Now, I imagine that some of our listeners are probably thinking, well, that's great. This is not a show for me because I'm never going to be a speaker and get up in front of an audience. But I noticed as I was reading this book that there are a lot of things in here that just apply to everyday communicating and making a difference and moving forward in the path of your life. What about that? Do you just speak to people who want to do speeches, or do you see this applicable to our everyday conversations and just getting along in the world?
I think we all need it to get along in the world. When I wrote the book, I did not want to do the traditional, here's how you speak, here are the techniques. And the structure came out to be the heart of speaking before it came to the art and then the energetics, because we're recognizing more and more that there's an energy field that surrounds every interaction, and our awareness of it and our capacity to manage it and manage ourselves is essential to showing up in our wholeness and being able to tell the new story or the better story that people can relate to so that things can move forward. So I don't care if it's one-on-one or even the story we tell ourselves. I'm hoping that this book will be an investigation into catching up with who we've become in this journey of our lives and getting current and becoming responsible for our impact so that we're very deliberate and inspired in our communications.
I love what you say about getting current. I think that's an interesting concept, and most of us are not real aware of how much our current speaking is shaped by the past rather than our own vision. What part does that play in transformational speaking?
Well, I think that there's a part of us that stays stuck in the past to our woundedness or victimization. I've studied many years with Angela Therrien, the cultural anthropologist. And one of the ways she says it is we're in jet lag in our life to who we've become. And as long as we get stuck in that old story about who we are and don't stand in the power of who we've become, it makes a huge difference because we don't speak from a place of power and groundedness, nor do we realize how much we really influence people. Whether, you know, one-on-one, it's one thing, but when we take a speaking platform and we say something, people tend to give it a lot of credence. And to know that we're responsible for what we're putting out there is a really essential aspect of it.
We have a lot of people on this show talking about a new story, whether it's in environmental or social justice or spiritual, people who have really begun to see that for the first time in history of the human race, that we have the capacity to... Not only the capacity, we have the power to change our world by changing our story and creating a new story that fits all people. And we've had Brian Swim and Drew Dillinger and lots of Joanna Macy and David Corton, people like that, talking about this new story. And I think what you're talking about is very related to seeing our biggest conversation that we can include people in and be included in for the betterment of the world. Is that the direction you go with transformational speaking?
I love the way you say that, Michael. It's the biggest conversation. Maybe it's the biggest conversation we can imagine, because imagination has to play into it. We can hear so much about what's going wrong and what we need to do, but until it taps into that place where it affects us emotionally, we're going to stay stuck and overwhelmed. I see so much of that. I was saying to my class this weekend, what if we just looked at the thing that breaks our heart the most? Rumi said, break my heart, break it again, so I can love even more again. And what if the thing that is breaking our heart is simply the place we are called to serve and put our love and attention? And if each of us did that rather than being overwhelmed, we would each be holding that strand of the web of life that's entrusted to us, and together we can make it whole. So it is the biggest conversation we can imagine, but it's probably a very individual thing we're each called to do. When we're trying to enlist a lot of other people in something we care about, often our best result is to enlist them in what they care about so that they understand it matters. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges all of us working on a better story right now are facing, that people feel like deer in the headlights and overwhelmed, and that means we do nothing.
Mm. You talk about breaking our heart. And it's an interesting thing to do. You know, Joanna Macy talks about breaking our heart open. But so much, whether it's in front of a room or in front of our friends, we tend to want to stuff that deep feeling of something's not right in the world, and the grief of what's happening with the loss of species and the impact on the planet. So how do you get beyond that feeling? I know when I've been in front of a group, I haven't been able to speak because I've been so moved by what I see that I'm afraid I'll just turn into a babbling idiot, which I usually do.
Well, and other people say, I'm going to cry, or I'm going to well up, as though we think emotion is not acceptable. Emotion is, until we feel our own feelings and emotion and have that be really alive within us, there's no way we can touch another person emotionally. I talk about in speaking our comfort zone and our home zone. Comfort zone is when we're in front of a group and we do the facts and the information and we do the professional job right. But when I ask people what makes a great speaker or great communicator, it has nothing to do with information. They say passionate, emotional, present, humble, humorous, irreverent. All the things that are the human qualities that if we understand that that's what carries our words, can make this fear of speaking out, even when, especially when we care deeply, less traumatizing. And I think it's the only way to do it when we're moved, to be able to say, this is breaking my heart, or it's bringing up a story, or I don't know how we're going to get from here to there, but, and I'm so frustrated by it. But until we're willing to be present with what is, I don't think we're going to move to what can be, because we're jumping over that capacity within us that can rise up and find that new conversation you were speaking of.
Mm. You know, I understand, I think, when you're talking about the comfort zone, it's more the things that we're familiar with and that fit into our own identity that we're willing to open ourselves and share about. What do you mean when you're talking about the home zone? I'm not quite clear about that.
The home zone is where we go beyond facts and information to share our emotions, typically through telling a story. And it shows the human capacity we're capable of to connect on a human level, not just a professional level. So when we can start bringing our stories alive, I think that's where we have the opportunity to have the most influence. People can look up facts and data on the internet, and they can each side of a position can argue brilliantly about why they're right. The one thing we can't argue with is the truth of another person's experience or perspective. And that can only be heard when we come from the home zone. So a story can be told from a comfort zone point of view and not land at all. But when we infuse those stories with the emotion and caring and feeling that makes it worth telling anyway, then it's really undeniable.
One of the things that I use to judge who I'm going to have on the show and also, you know, just in life, who I want to hang around, is that there are people who speak about what they don't want. And that's probably the predominant part of our conversations when we overhear and listen conversations. But a lot of people have a power to speak about what they do want and are very clear. How do we get clear and how do we discover what we really want to say? I think that's a challenge sometimes.
Well, I think it is, and I think it requires allowing ourselves to step forward in that discomfort and thinking and realizing it doesn't have to be perfect, it needs to be real. People understand in the moment if something is real and coming from a heartfelt place. It makes all the difference in how we're heard, and in that realness we can explore the aspects of life and living on this planet that we don't yet have answers for. And in the exploration, we can find that vision that we hold that we can then ask others to step in and join with us in it. But if we remain silent and don't give ourselves safe places to explore our ideas, we're not going to get to that point. I think probably the people you know who are the most eloquent about what's possible have very strong communities where they get to talk about it and add to their ideas and do some deep thinking and digging down to get it to the next level. And it's required of all of us right now.
There's a lot of myths, I think, about what makes a great speaker or a great speech. And I'm just wondering if you could talk about some of the myths that keep us from really, you know, I know people who've been in Toastmasters for 30 years and really working hard at it, and technique-wise, they seem to be getting better, but a lot of times I'm not that touched or moved by their speeches. What is it that...
It's because it's technique. And I've been thrilled, Michael, that I've had a couple of Toastmasters in programs this month and just heard from a Toastmasters group at the Agape Center, Michael Beckworth Spiritual Center in Southern California, because one of the women who wrote to me said, I've been in Toastmasters for years and I never quite felt like when I told my story it landed. And when she allowed herself to show the emotions and to feel the emotions around the story, everything changed. And I was delighted to hear it because I think Toastmasters is wonderful for getting us up on our feet in front of a group regularly. However, it is very much geared toward speaking techniques. And I think techniques applied prematurely really distance us from our true capacity to communicate. Instead of focusing on what we really want to say, we're more intrigued about the techniques and counting how many times we say and looking at our pacing, and those things really tend to fall in place when you're deeply connected to yourself.
How do I tap into that place, though? You know, I know I'm pretty guarded, and other people are pretty guarded. We want to somehow control our emotions or, you know, block them. How do you work with people to get them in touch with their emotions, and then behind the emotions, finding the value or the story that really wants to be told, that's our particular story?
When I work with people, I ask them not to tell me a story, but to relive a story. Or if it's the new story, to imagine living it. When we put ourselves into the emotional reality of it and tell it from there, it completely changes. And it's actually kind of simple once someone feels that home zone or witnesses it in someone else, when I start making deliberate what's happening. So instead of saying, my friend Kathleen told me such and such, you might say, Kathleen, who's this amazing woman, said to me, Gail, you know, and then going on with what it is she had to say. So suddenly every person that we're mentioning in that story becomes a character. And you give them a personality, you give them the way they say their words, and by doing that, you connect with the feeling you had at the time you were having that conversation. And it allows the audience or the listener in to join you in that intimate moment, rather than telling someone about it from a detached place. Another way we can do it is to not use the universal you. It's even like saying, speaking from the heart. I want to speak not from the heart. I want to speak from my heart. And I want you to speak from your heart. But we talk about you instead of me, and thee instead of mine. And every one of these small words makes all the difference in either distancing people or bringing them closer to feeling our experience with us.
Could you give us an example from your own life of this kind of story, that you're reliving the story or that you're creating the new story in your speaking? And can you give us a story that shows that and what impact that story had on people?
I'll tell you a story I told for the first time this weekend that happened in Nevada City, of all places. And let's see how I'd want to start it. I'd say this year I learned that love makes your soul climb out from its hiding place. I've had a really challenging time with my relocation to the Northwest. I'm used to sunshine, 25 years in the Southwest, and suddenly I'm in rain. And it affected me with a level of seasonal affective disorder that I would not have believed. It was so debilitating. And although I came through it last year, what I found was that I had a shield of protection around me that was pretty much impenetrable. In April, I packed up my two little long-haired dachshunds, Sienna and Samson, and went to Nevada City to have a real speaking program in the home of my friend Kathleen McIntyre. Before I went, I had the most interesting dream. I dreamed I was walking through the woods looking for my purse. Now, the Jungians will have a great time with this. And coming toward me on another trail were a band of forest people, and they were singing my name in four-part harmony. They were singing, Gail Larson, Gail Larson. And it was the most beautiful sound I had ever heard. But I was looking for my purse. So I kept sitting, some friends with me said, oh, they're singing your name. I said, I'll get back to them. The next morning when I remembered that dream, I thought, oh, my gosh, what have I done? So I went back into the dream and my imagination, and I greeted these people, these little forest people, and they came running out and surrounded me, and they said, "It's her, it's her." And they had my purse. So a week later, I get to Kathleen's house, and I realize that I am standing in the place of where I had the dream. It was so magical. And we had a magical class, and actually at the end of the class, everybody sang my name because I told them about the dream. I was getting ready to leave. I did not want to leave this magical place. I felt like I was finally breaking down that shield. And I did two conscious acts unconsciously. I recycled and didn't turn the lights on. And I fell in the garage and broke both my legs. Well, I couldn't leave at that point.
That's one way to get to be a permanent guest.
I was there for quite a while. And I would have been in a nursing home had my brother and his wife not flown out to help me. And Kathleen, who was leaving on a trip, left me a card when she left me at her beautiful home. And the card said, as I mentioned earlier, love makes your soul climb out from its hiding place. And what I found from this, Michael, is that the love I had to let in, because I could not do anything for myself. I could not move for a full week until I got my casts on. That I had to allow myself to receive for the first time in many years as a single woman trying to live an adult life and take care of myself. And it has completely transformed my experience. So that's the way I tell the story. And when I have people in front of me being able to do that, we're all sort of nodding and saying, oh, yeah, yeah, what would happen if I allowed myself to ask for help? What would happen if I allowed myself to be vulnerable? And I think those are the questions that we start asking ourselves in order to get together in a way that we start telling a better story.
Mm.
Does that come through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And in addition to that, you certainly give new meaning to the old stage saying, break a leg. In fact, you did it in a big way. You broke two of them.
Yeah, I've been very careful about saying that to anybody lately. Yeah, at least if you're going to break a leg, only do one of them.
Let me tell our listeners, if you just tuned in, we're talking to Gail Larson, author of Transformational Speaking. If you want to change the world, tell a better story. It's on KVMR 89.5 FM. This is Michael Stone, host of Conversations, and I want to also thank our underwriter, our supporter, Sacramento Natural Food Co-op, presenting the class Container Gardening, where participants learn to plant vegetables best suited for containers in small spaces. That's Saturday, September 26th, 10 a.m. at Soilborne Farm in Sacramento, and you can get a complete class schedule at sacfoodcoop.com. Well, Gail, let's go into this a little more. So, we're talking about the qualities of a good speaker, whether you're telling a story to one person or hundreds of people. And one of the things, I'm going to shorthand what you're saying, is that we're looking to find our true self. What does it mean to liberate our true self and to discover that? And that seems to be a lot of the work. Can you talk a little more about that finding of the true self and liberating it?
I work with the concept of original medicine that comes from indigenous teachings. There's the belief that we all come to this earth with gifts and talents nowhere else duplicated. And as most of us know, our life experience tends to suppress them because we're trying to fit in socially. And I often wonder if the first half of life isn't about learning to fit in, and then when we're wanting, then we later just, the second half is about learning to stand out and to move back to that original medicine and to reclaim it. But in the process, in addition to those gifts and talents, we have a configuration of life experiences that no one else holds. which is so amazing because it means we each see the world in different ways and we bring our own medicine to it to be part of what's needed now in this better story. It's called original medicine because we're the only ones who have it. And it's called medicine because it's a real healing gift to ourselves and others. So when we start delving into what is that original medicine and finding words for it, it gives us an opportunity to stand in the power of who we are. The other part of the original medicine teaching is that if we don't bring that forward, it's lost to the world for all time. So I think this is a beautiful story, Michael. It's like we each got something that's a part of this emerging story and this puzzle that we're trying to figure out in our times right now, that if we sit out the game, we don't get to bring our peace to it. Mm-hmm. So that finding ourselves and the quality of a great speaker, as I mentioned earlier, when I ask people about the qualities, it rarely has anything to do with information or organization. It's as though that's assumed. But everything that I'll write down on a board as people tell me what makes a great speaker are typically personal qualities they already possess. And then the question comes, why aren't you bringing them into your speaking? How come you think there's a way to speak that shuts this very human, connected part of yourself down? And so the liberation is to realize, oh, not only is it acceptable, it's the only thing that's going to make me great. The other piece of it is recognizing we each have our own way to do it. I think what you said earlier about Toastmasters is that it can look like a cookie-cutter approach, and we want to bring in our individuality. So when we find that we can, and we bring our own brand of humor to it, or our own insight, our own capacity to connect to another person's soul, or our own interest in stalking new stories, or whatever it might be, then it becomes our own way of doing it that frees us, because it's amazing how well it's received. So I'm always asking for people of more of them, not a technique. So I can coach someone and they can tell me something and I just see a hint of some spark that they're shutting down. Or I see a hint of emotion that they're suppressing. And that's usually where I'll stop and say, what's going on? Let's see more of that. What are the feelings underneath that? And usually as we go deeper into that, this whole new story and possibility arises up out of that person. So it's causing me to think that the answers we're looking for aren't out there at all, that it requires that we keep going deeper into what we already hold, so that they're, what we're willing to express it and contribute it to this big soup right now of how we're going to find a new way.
That's beautiful. When you talk about original medicine, I'm reminded that you spent some time studying with, well, besides Angie Asari and Alberto Villalta. I'm just wondering the impact of shamanism and cultural anthropology and some of the things you've been involved in your own great passion and vision for the value of speaking in transforming our world.
Well, it really started with Angelus, because I came out of a pretty strict religious background that didn't leave much room for stepping outside the mold. Excuse me. So when I learned about the fourfold way and how simple it was, it gave me a whole new touchstone, and that's Angelus Arian's work, The Fourfold Way, indigenous teachings cross-culturally that we apply to contemporary life. Show up and be present. Tell the truth without blame or judgment. Pay attention to what has heart and meaning. Be open to outcome, not attached to outcome. That really is my underlying foundation for my life, and also the way I work with real speaking. Because when we do show up and find a way to be present, even when we're feeling terrified, and when we do pay attention to what has heart and meaning, so that it brings us alive, so it can then touch an audience, and when we tell the truth without blaming others, then it's far easier to let the outcome be what it will be without trying to control it. In fact, it's necessary, because I love what Gertrude Stein said when she said, if we already knew it, it would not be creation but dictation. And the last thing we need in our challenging times right now is dictation from an old mindset. We need creation. So we don't know it. And if we can allow ourselves to admit that we need to be open to outcome, not attached, inherent as that is the new possibility. I've continued my shamanic studies with many teachers. And actually, I saw Alberto at Omega this weekend and had just given him a copy of Transformational Speaking, because another piece of the puzzle fell into place for me when he was talking about how shamans heal. And he said, in mainstream medicine, if you have a symptom, you give it a prescription and you suppress the symptom. But if there's a higher level, and we can intervene at the mind with psychotherapy, for example, and how we think can affect what that symptom is. But a shaman will heal at the level of the soul or the spirit, the soul being our individual experience and the spirit being collective, by, guess what, story, ritual, chant, poetry, song, all these things that bypass the rational mind and have the opportunity to move us into a higher soul connection vibration, which can take us to that energetic place where there are no words, but there are also no differences. And, of course, a shaman will heal by intervening in that energetic field so that something never needs to become a symptom in the body. So I was watching this, and I thought, that's it. The lower level is activism, and using the mind is advocacy. But to move to that level of soul is artistry. And that's how I want to see us telling our stories, so that they bring in that imagination and that capacity for us to really feel that new possibility. So it could be from the levels of information to insight to imagination and then to illumination, which is what we're going for right now as we look at the problems we're looking at and to find that new way of illuminating them so that we can move forward together.
What comes up when you're talking to me is I'm thinking, wow, what if we lived our life every day as art and we, you know, generated our story as, you know, our entry into the world every day? A lot of what we've been talking about now is the artistry of the speaker. But I'd like you to talk about the other half of this, the relationship of the speaker to the listener. You know, that's such a huge thing, because as I've discovered in 30 years of communications work, that we think of ourselves as a blank slate, a tabula rasa, but in fact, the listening is never really open. It's always filtered. It's always going through our past and our history. So if we're going to be a powerful speaker, what do we need to know? I remember someone telling me years ago about public speaking, quit trying to be interesting and get interested.
Absolutely.
And speak to that a little bit about the listener.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a Native American phrase that says, tell me a fact and I'll listen. Tell me a truth and I'll learn, but tell me a story, and it will live in my heart forever. So my work with clients is to get to that story and their original medicine. But when we get to when we're interacting with another person or we're interacting with an audience, it's not about us anymore. It's about how we're able to take that medicine to navigate that space between what we know and who we are, to meet them where they are. And that's quite an interesting dance. It can be, if you are in a speaking situation where it's the old sage on the stage model and you've just got to get up and speak for a while, it really requires being present to the energy in the room and whether people are with you or feeling perplexed or angry, so that we can keep coming and tapping back in. But that's true one-on-one as well. I think it's easier one-on-one, Michael, because it becomes a conversation,
yeah,
where we can get that feedback in the moment. But I think if you're on a stage, your feedback is often more energetic than verbal, and it takes another level of skill.
What I hear in the background of what you're talking about in transformational speaking has a lot more to do with the listening, because if you're thinking transformational, my thought of that is, in order to be transformational, it has to create a change in the listener somehow.
Absolutely.
What do you have to say about creating change in the listener with your speaking?
Well, I think the only shot we have at it is moving it into art, because otherwise we're in information overload and another good idea makes absolutely no difference. We go back to our lives and it's just, you know, it may hang in the air overnight, but until it begins a new conversation, I don't think it's creating change. But let's see if I can pick up a thread of something you said about the listening. I think it's possible in the role of speaker or facilitator to listen for the new story that wants to emerge. So we're listening for it within ourselves, but then when we have that really sacred opportunity with a group of people to listen to what's trying to find form and words there, it's a, you know, for me, it's not just listening, it's bringing an intuitive sense to it, because we often don't have the words yet for something that we know is just bubbling under the surface, and it requires allowing space for it to be less than perfect. You know, if we wait until it's perfect, it's old news. And this need to show up as having it together and having all the answers truly gets in our way. So I think the listening is part of also about creating a space of safety for exploration so that something new can be said or heard.
Heidegger said one time that language is the house of being. I see what you're talking about in terms of speaking rather than methodology, more ontological. It's more about who are we being in our relationship to the other as we share what it is our heart's desire or our heart is open to. Is that, am I catching
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And people feel it.
They do, you don't know, they? They really
you don't,
do.
You don't have to be your idea of a great speaker. When we show up as individual and real and in love, it is felt. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "The giving of love is an education in itself." And people, someone asked me recently what my how this transforms people's capacity to step out in their speaking, and I say, "I think I just love them into their magnificence." Because I am so curious about people. And as I see those shells of inhibition come off and the capacity to care openly and speak from a deep place, everyone in the room falls in love with that speaker. You can hear a pin drop. It's only, I love the Gary Larson cartoon where he says, "What does your dog hear when you speak? Blah, 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 Ginger." And as long as we're hearing the blah, 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 people are checking their email and off somewhere else. But as soon as we move into the vulnerability of being real in a story or an investigation, everyone is with you.
And everyone in what I've seen as a powerful speaker, everyone seems to be included in it. And so often speakers are exclusive, but when you're inclusive as a speaker, I just saw something. In fact, I sent it out in my newsletter, The Well of Light, and I just saw this great video with a man with no arms and no legs giving a speech to a group of high school girls. They were completely mesmerized by who he was being in the face of his disabilities, including falling over on his face and having to figure out how to get up with no arms and no legs, and people were just completely there. And I think about what you talk about with Joseph Campbell, who, wonderful man, and has done so much around the hero's journey. Talk a little bit about your relationship to storytelling and the idea of the hero's journey.
Well, I think the fundamental idea of the hero's journey is that our wound transform becomes our source of power. And our wounds are pretty much around some common universal themes. So in our modern culture, it's around the financial markets. It's about our health. It's about our relationships. It's about our spiritual life. And we all have heroic journeys in various aspects of our lives that can be used as teaching stories for others when we have moved through that raw terror of the unexpected taking us to our knees. So when I look at people who want to speak, I look at how that personal story and their own hero's journey exemplifies the message they're here to bring. I mean, along with the original medicine, we need to know our core message, and with those two things, we can, you know, we're ready to speak. And then we look at the story in our life that it came from, because people want to know we've earned the right to talk about it. It isn't something well-researched. It's something that our life has called us to. So that's how I work with it. And the last part of the hero's journey is returning, you know, the homecoming.
To tell the story.
Yeah, returning to the village to tell the story. And in the olden days, people were sung back into their villages to tell the story, and that's not quite our experience these days. So it's very important to find the communities where we can share the stories of our heroic journeys, because anyone who's stepping up now to create a new possibility is a hero in my book.
Mm. You talk about the transforming the wounds, but I think most people, our real original wounds that we have are things that we mostly suppress and keep down. How do we get close to that place and discern what it is and what the learning and the growth from that, those original wounds? How do we get close enough and then create a story that's inspiring and not, I guess where I'm going with that, and not like poor me, a sob story, but something that is inspiring to someone?
Mm-hmm. That came up this weekend, and we were doing some thinking together about it with the group, because there was a woman who, an amazing woman who taught laughter yoga. And she said, you know, I don't want to talk about my miserable family, that I somehow was the one who managed to get out of this situation of extreme mental illness and everything else. And I said, yes, but is it possible that that message is for people to really understand laughter yoga, instead of you being this perky, turned on, make us laugh, upbeat person, maybe part of what you have to share with your story is often it's about that depth to which you go also brings you to these heights, and that life is all of it, and that we can choose joy as a state as opposed to the depression or the angst about what's not working in the world. And so when she started putting that together, which was very timely because she's speaking this week, she got really excited because I said, I don't think anybody wants to hear the old story until you've also put the new story with it, that you come out of that hero's journey with a new vision and a new way of being that you're bringing into the world, and that's what we want to hear. But the story of the healing that had to happen to get us there touches other people because most of us are in that healing process in our own way. And we see someone who can give us hope that we can get to the other side of it.
I love the way you say that. It's like we can take the garbage and the unwanted junk of our life and compost it in a way to make a beautiful bouquet to give to someone every time we open our mouth.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Let's talk in these last couple minutes, Gail, about how the listener here, not all of which want to go out and be public speakers, but can use the whole concept of transformational speaking and changing the story. Well, there's one other part I want you to talk about, this changing the story, too, and that is one of the things I've noticed is that the people with which we surround ourselves reinforce our old story of being a victim or being this or that, whatever we've identified with. So when we go to transform or change a story, we have to pay particular attention to the people who are in our circle because they come to it with a listening that's already established and can really hold us in that place. For instance, when you go home for Thanksgiving dinner, you're just the same child with mom and the same, you know, those things all start coming up and all of a sudden you feel like you're 12 again. How do we deal with that with people out there before we get into that other question? How do we deal with that?
Well, lots of times we have to make very strong choices about where we choose to be because we want it to be supporting a higher vibration. And hopefully we're in communities and conversations that we can raise that vibration together, but sometimes we have to say no to the things that take us down. I think all the research would show that if we can be with like-minded people, the vibrational scale exponentially can make such a difference. And if we're stretching, you know, on a regular basis to get down to someone else's level, it's taking us down. It's not bringing them up. So whether that's your family or an audience you're speaking to, it behooves considering, you know, developing new communities.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, that doesn't mean throw out the old community either, but to reinforce that story is to get a group of people around us that really hold that. Paul Hawken made a huge difference a couple years ago at Bioneers Conference when he revealed that, you know, sometimes we think we're alone in some of the environmental movements, not as much now as years ago, but some of these areas, and his research showed that there were, now it's gotten to, I think, 2 million organizations worldwide that are working on environmental and social justice issues, but it's under the radar.
Well, you know, but he's connected with one of my clients, Chris Jordan, who's the photographer who works with graphic images, and they are putting those into a mandala that if they were to put all those organizations, and I think it was 8-point type, it extended something like 3 miles. And they're looking for a place. Chris is working on how to do that so they can do that in stone or create something that's in a very prominent place, you know, in a circle form, like in the nation's capital, as a reminder to us. So I think as people talk about that, and both Paul and Chris are a great example, you come together and you find ways to make it visible. And that is about getting with the right people to bring that idea forward.
Yes, it is. Well, we've only got a couple minutes, actually about a minute left here, Gail. So any last words that you'd like to share with our listeners that would help them to ground themselves in their own vision, their own story, and find a way to communicate that, whether it's with large groups or small groups?
I'm going to just give you a quick Rumi poem that I think says it all. He said, "If I see you, I will laugh out loud or fall silent or explode into a thousand pieces. And if I don't, I am stuck in the stone and brick of my own prison. We have the capacity through our communications, whether it's one person or a thousand, to get someone out of the stone and brick of their own prison, but it's because of our willingness to be seen.
That's beautiful. And it takes each one of us to create an evolutionary jump. And I'm really appreciative of the amazing work that you're doing, Gail Larson, author of Transformational Speaking, If You Want to Change the World, Tell a Better Story. And you can find out more about Gail by going to www.realspeaking.net. Right, Gail?
That's right, Michael. Thank you so
lovely.
Much. I've loved our conversation.
Lovely to have you on the show. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Gail. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Gail Larson, wonderful storyteller and helping other people to tell their story. Coming up next week will be Jean Houston, speaking of creating your own story, a master scholar, philosopher, researcher in human capacity. Also, Tina Stanley and Ed Bastini, Living Fully, Dying Well on October 6th. October 13th, David Crow, Herbal Medicine and Spirituality. And October 20th, for our membership show, David White, a dear friend and someone who's really supportive of KVMR, is made the time to be with us. So that's October 20th with David White. I want to thank you so much for listening and for your time. Also, a big thanks to Sacramento Natural Food Co-op's presenting the class Spanish Wine Country Cuisine, wherein participants prepare several favorite Spanish dishes with each course complemented by a different Spanish varietal wine. That's, ooh, sounds good. I'm not supposed to say that. Saturday, September 26th at 2 p.m., complete class schedule at sacfoodcoop.com. Okay, so again, it's just a pleasure to be with you on the show, and I'm looking forward to our next show. Coming up next is So Many Roads with Richard Tews. 4 p.m. is Elisa Parker. Music Magazine. 6 p.m. KVMR Evening News with Paul Emery. 7 o'clock Democracy Now! Amy Goodman. 8 o'clock The Other Side with Julia Borinsky Harper. 10 o'clock Transit Lounge with Bill Emerson. And then we start all over again with a new day. May you have a new day. Thank you for listening. May you have a new day every day. Blessings.